Welcome to Finding Emo. I'm Blake Fisher. This is Chris Monier. This
Hi.
Is Kyle Simmons. This is our podcast where we talk about our favorite albums from the early aughts and thereabouts. We talk about the musicianship, the production, the songwriting, all the good stuff.
And we're not texting. We have our notes on our phone.
That's right.
They're texting. It's a group chat.
We're sexting.
LOL, oh. Emoticon.
Yes.
And then pinch fingers. I use that one a lot now.
The chef's kiss?
Well, no, pinch fingers. Like it's like Italian. Like,
right, but isn't that the chef's kiss?
Wow. A carabas.
Right? So I don't
think it's both.
Kyle wins. Conversation Kyle wins, over. Yeah. Doesn't matter what anyone else
Doesn't
says.
Doesn't really matter.
Carabas.
A carabas.
Today we're talking about Newfound Glory's Sticks and Stones.
Right.
2002? 22 years
22.
Old.
Year of our Lord,
Kyle,
2000.
Yeah, September, right? I don't remember. What was the date?
June,
sorry. I was way off. Kyle, tell us about this record. You did the research.
I did. Came out in June of 2002.
Established.
This was their first with Neil Avron.
Right.
Oh, okay. It's
a pretty big deal. And
we love Neil Avron.
Is this after Ocean Avenue?
Before? No, before.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ocean Avenue is the next year.
Wait a second. From Yellow Card? I thought for a second you thought that Ocean Avenue was their first record. I was like, Chris.
No.
You're drunk.
I love when they do the violin thing in Newfound Glory.
Newfound Glory's like violinist is the bomb.
Yeah.
So this is their first record with Neil Avron. And actually, I keep saying first record. I don't know if they did another one, but like doing a record with him, pretty big deal.
Yeah.
And Neil was making some music at the time.
Yeah.
But
this is his genre. I mean, like pop punk, big guitars.
I don't know if you guys remember, but Mark Hoppus was big on Newfound Glory at this time. And I think they had taken them on some dates like here and there. And he came in, and Mark actually plays bass on one of the songs.
No kidding.
Really? Yeah. Which one?
I made sure to feature
it. Or are we
going
to get to it?
Yeah, we'll get to it.
You're going to get to it. It's in a clip. Good.
But yeah, even Blink's, so Blink's management picked up Newfound Glory. Rick DeVoe.
This is probably a good thing in 2001.
That's the manager you want. Yeah.
It's the dream.
Let's see.
The dream wasn't famous yet.
But really,
No, I don't know.
Well, what's the dream?
The dream, the singer-songwriter guy.
Oh, the dream.
The dream, yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. sold 91,000 copies in its first week.
That's not bad.
Dang.
That's pretty good.
But was My Friends Over You the first single?
Yes.
Yeah, that would be why.
Yes.
It's a banger.
And then other than that, not a lot of actual news, but we do know this. Two pretty big bands in the genre name themselves after songs on this album.
Oh, I'm gonna try to guess.
I know one, because I was wondering if the band was around before the title of the song. What is it? It's
Sonny from First to Last named himself after their song Sonny.
That's it.
All Time Low.
Yeah, All Time Low. And that was the one I was thinking. And hold on.
Story So Far.
That's the one I thought.
Oh,
well, that was gonna be my question. Which came first?
Band.
Yeah.
Wait, where All Time Low?
All Time Low came first. I think the Story So Far is.
There's a song called All Time Low?
There's a lyric.
Lyric.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
No, you're fine.
Yeah. Head on Collision.
Said, but yeah.
But like, yeah, so two really big, important bands now in the genre naming them are, I don't know, is All Time Low now? They're still now, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, okay.
Yeah, no, I would say they're pretty big bands still. Yeah,
I would say that would be a name.
Story So Far.
They opened up for Blink 182 on their first Schema tour.
Yep.
That's huge.
And the Story So Far opened up for Blink, right?
Yeah.
This last one.
Yeah, yeah. And so
Mark's doing all of this.
Oh,
it's got to be all Mark.
It's the same. It's
the puppet master, the godfather.
Okay, so, and that's why.
Yeah, you really
You're kind of joking, kind of not. Yeah. But that's why I bring up that Mark loved this band, went in, played on a track, and it's like he did the same thing with these guys, and like. He took Turnstile out, Story So Far. I think it was a Story So Far and No Pressure, which is, Parker, both of them are his bands. So, and if you haven't listened to No Pressure, you totally should.
Okay.
It's excellent.
I will.
Anyway, don't really have any much, I don't have anything more than that.
I learned something interesting about this band.
What was it?
Well, I learned that Jordan and one of the other guys went to Marjorie Stone, whatever, Douglas High School, where the Parkland shooting was.
I did not.
I knew that.
Weird.
Yeah.
I was like reading something. I was like, wait, that, why does that high school name sound familiar and have a link on Wikipedia? That can't be a good thing.
Yep.
And it wasn't.
It wasn't.
Anyway, that's random tidbit of information.
Oh.
Jordan Steven.
He also looks like Quentin Tarantino.
Jordan?
Yeah.
I can see that.
Yeah.
I can see that. I would say neither of them traditionally handsome fellas, maybe. Is that fair?
I mean, I think it's fair, but I do think Jordan is a cool looking dude.
Yeah, Jordan's a cool always kind of look like he just sucked on a lemon.
That's kind of it. Yes, exactly.
Oh, and the record did end up going platinum. Kind of a big deal.
Dude, platinum's insane.
We were right on the end of that train, weren't we? This was like right at the end of like stuff shipping platinum and going platinum. And that was kind of what we were doing at this point. And then it just kind of like,
This fell was also off a right cliff. At the end of like being in New York and being on TRL Live.
Yep.
And,
you know, all of that good stuff. All right. Well, that's what we need to know about, I guess, about the intro to the album. Wait, so this is their third full length album, right?
Yes. So you have Nothing Gold Can Stay.
Self-titled.
And then this one.
Yeah. All in like 3 years, right?
Yeah. And this one also was, I believe, their first drive-through MCA release.
Okay.
It could be the same thing that we've talked about with other bands where they retroactively took on self-titled. I'm not positive. Like they bought their catalog from drive-through.
Oh, I'm
not positive. But yeah. And also, I remember that time, like, It was like, oh man, drive-through bands, like get on drive-through, then someone bigger is gonna pick you up and you're gonna be famous. Cause like I remember the starting line was on TRL.
This was happening to like everyone at the time.
Yeah.
Yep.
Start you on an indie, it was like drive-through,
Midtown,
Vagrant. What's the other one that
Well fueled by like... ramen, but it's not real.
Well, yeah, but you're right, because it was Island Decadence. The whole time, right?
Decadence,
oh,
whatever.
We're saying Fueled by Ramen was always just a front.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Fueled by Ramen was always owned by Island, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I mean, or at least pretty early on. Because once, yeah.
Well, I remember when that label started, it was like everybody talked about how it was the drummer from Less Than Jake, how he was like really involved.
Oh, really?
I thought so.
I didn't know that.
Remember.
I don't know.
Yeah, but a lot of these bands launched off of these smaller labels into bigger labels for their second or third records. Which is a good way to do it. It's a slow burn instead of just like pumping all into one record that like if it doesn't do well, you're done. Because that was the other thing that was happening then. It was just like, you're dropped. Sorry.
Yep. One really great sounding record.
Yeah, they wanted like some like, oh, okay, yeah. They like kind of built a little bit of a fan base. We can build on that. And like the third record was a lot of times the major label one.
Yeah. Well, and Catalyst follows this, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
To your point.
Well, should we go to first impressions? Kyle, do you want to go first? Since I feel like you're already telling us about the record. I feel like you're probably the biggest Newfound Glory fan in the room.
I love Newfound Glory.
Other than Elvis.
I love, yeah.
The whole.
He's actually big, bro. Yeah. The opposite of Jordan's voice is Elvis's voice, by the way.
Well, yeah, it really is, isn't it?
I love them. I don't think they've ever put out anything that I didn't instantly love. I remember this one because I was like working at Charleston's and
local restaurant.
Yes. Excellent.
With delicious mashed potatoes.
If you come to Oklahoma, the rolls, check it out.
The rolls.
The croissants.
Very
good. But yeah, I was working at Charleston's. It came out. I picked it up and I just listened to it nonstop.
In his headphones while waiting tables.
Yeah.
He was not paying attention to customers. Totally.
No, I was cranking it in the car like you used to do, you know?
Yes.
I had a...
It's the best way to go. Windows down, because you don't have air conditioning probably, because you're poor.
I didn't either.
Yeah, for sure. It's like windows down.
And I didn't have an air conditioning, but I had a sub.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, like, what am I going to prioritize? I can deal with the heat, but I need some bass in this place.
Yeah. I need some bass in my face. I don't need to cool down.
Yeah, I 100% had two cars that had subwoofers in them and a new CD player because the cars were old enough that they did not have CD players in them because they were from the 80s or early 90s. My first car was a 90 Corolla. And yeah, you spent the money on the stereo, right?
Right. I had an 86 Maxima, but it had like a $700 five disc changer.
Yeah.
Six discs.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. That was big time. If you could have the six disc changer, I feel like you were like living high on the hog.
Living the dream.
Yeah. That's the dream. Capital T. capital D.
I liked, there, it had a mode where you, it's funny to think now with iPods, but, well, not even iPods, but Apple, you know,
just
iPhones.
Or phones.
But, like, it had a mode where you could shuffle every song, which is kind of like shuffling your whole music collection.
Yeah.
But since it's a 6-disc CD changer with, like, a lot of mechanical parts, you know, like, in between each song, you're just like...
Like, 12 seconds between every song.
And then it's, like, the secret track, and you're like, damn it!
Yeah, no. And then you skip, and now you got 15 more
now
seconds.
Now I'm where I was driving to.
Yeah. Especially everywhere I'm driving to is, like, 5 minutes away from me anyway. So, yeah, that would not have worked very well. I'm a little nostalgic for the days of like picking who rode shotgun if you were driving was kind of a big deal because you were entrusting them with the changing of the music.
It's a big deal.
And I had a pretty strict rule in my car of like, you do not stop a song in the middle of it. I don't care. No. Like, we're finishing the song. You don't pop the CD out in the middle of the song. You wait till the end of it and then we can play DJ. That's fine. But you don't stop in the middle of the song.
Yeah, and you better be good at it. Smooth transition.
Smooth transitions. You need to have the next one ready, know what you're going for. Don't get 30 seconds into the next song, then eject it. And like, that's the same thing. It's like, no, I'd rather just listen to this song now. We're already 30 seconds in.
If someone failed you, you're like, get in the
back! Get in the back!
You've been banished.
Permanently banished from shotgun.
Hey, so this is funny to me, but sign of the times. So the record was released June 11th, 2002. The single was released in August of 2002.
How is that? How did it sell that many copies in the first week if it wasn't released? That, those dates cannot be right. Because back then, they released the single like months before the album came out.
It just makes me wonder if they... I don't know. Maybe MCA did release self-titled.
I don't know.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
There's no way it sold that many copies without My Friends Over You. That's a tenth of what it sold overall in the first week. Basically, in the first week, that single had to be out.
And that single, we'll talk about it when we get there.
We'll
but
get there.
I mean,
it's track two.
It was a good way to introduce themselves.
For sure.
So,
Chris, what about your first impressions?
I was not a huge Newfound Glory fan. And it wasn't for any specific reason. It wasn't because I didn't like their music. I think we've talked about this before. I wasn't a drive-through guy. I was a Vagrant guy. And I hadn't really gotten into them yet.
We did kind of pick sides back then with
it was
that
like
kind
Bloods
of thing,
and Crips.
I feel like. Yeah. it was our really nerdy version where no one died.
Yeah. No deaths that we know of. East Coast, West Coast.
There's a little more sharks and jets. A little more.
Yeah.
This vibe.
But yeah, definitely. But when I heard My Friends Over You, I was like, wow, this is really good. And the video was really cool. And yeah, I went out and bought the record. It was the fall. So I didn't buy it when it came out. I bought it like maybe October, November. No, I'd say maybe September, November. September, October, November.
Because you were mouth guitar in it.
Yeah. I had that. I owned a motorcycle at that time in my life. It's the only time I've owned a motorcycle.
Nice.
The happiest 3 months of my life. Until my, you know, kids were born, that was a great day.
Yeah.
Doesn't hold a candle to the 3 months I had the motorcycle.
The 3 months I had the motorcycle.
Yeah.
Those 3 months.
And I'd say it right to their faces. but I just remember that because I was listening to it, like, while I was riding around Lake Overholser. And, like, I think it's sunny that... That is a great riding your motorcycle in the fall around a lake song.
I agree.
And a sad song, but it sounds happy.
Yeah, but it's got a bounce to
the motorcycle.
Yeah, it does. I'm a little bit in Chris's boat. I like Newfound Glory. I don't remember loving this record, though. I remember really liking Self-Titled a lot, but I don't remember a lot about this record. And I think I know why as we go track by track, like as I dove back into it to do this episode. I think I understand why. I think the same things that don't hit me now didn't hit me then either kind of thing.
Yeah.
There's just some things that, you know, just to be like totally upfront, like Jordan's voice is
polarizing.
Hard sometimes.
Yeah.
And like, but, and then on a lot of Catalyst, I really like it.
Yeah.
I think this, what's the song Catalyst with him and his like sister that's singing, right? I think it's his sister that's also like singing the duet with him. I think it's on Catalyst.
I'm not
can't
sure.
Remember. Anyway, like, I'm like, they sound really good together. And it's not like, I don't know. So we were like, it's not high, it's like nasally. It's very nasally, which is like a sound for pop punk, and I get it, and I don't, it's like I can get beyond it for sure. And I have been better about that in my older age than I was in younger. Like, I used to not like Stevie Nicks' voice either when I was a kid. Right. Now I'm like, were you an idiot? Like, she's fantastic, you know? But there was just something about it I didn't like, or like, I never really liked Bob Dylan because I don't like his voice. I mean, there's all these people that like, very talented, obviously, yeah, successful, that for some reason I can't get behind the voice. And they're a little bit like that, but I do remember liking the self-titled one more than this record. And I think after revisiting them, I feel similarly or something. So it just didn't hit me the same. And I think that, you're right. I mean, like, listening now with the, you know, with you saying that basically, like, they're a hardcore band with a pop punk vocal. Well,
that's what I was going to say. We talked about this off pod.
We did. We didn't talk about it on the podcast, but yeah, you were mentioning it before we, yeah, we almost never talk about the records before we talk about it. We were just having to be talking about Newfound Glory. Not this record, actually. We were talking about their other stuff. Right. But
yeah.
And you mentioned that, and I was like, that makes sense. And it also makes sense that it wouldn't hit me as hard because I wasn't into hardcore.
Yeah.
And so that part didn't excite me. I like the instrumentation in this. Sure. I think they're all obviously very talented musicians and they do some really cool stuff. Something about the combination of like not understanding what that was and probably a little bit of his voice. And honestly, I just think the lyrics aren't fantastic on most of this record for me.
It's which is so hilarious because this is when Steve was still in the band, and that was his thing.
And he wrote it.
I write the lyrics. It's
which
like,
makes
buddy?
Me feel way less bad about crapping on the lyrics because it's like, oh, well, you're into kiddie porn, so I don't really care as much that I don't like your lyrics. So, right?
Well, no, that the first impression, like the very first two lyrics or lines, I was like, what?
And like, I know we've had other controversial subjects on this, but normally there's like some nuance to it. There's not really any nuance to this one. The guy's a freaking creep.
Yeah.
And was convicted of, you know, doing things with a minor and having child pornography. So it's like, all right, I feel less bad saying his lyrics suck.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Is that wrong of me?
No. And here, okay. So I know that we never do this, but I do want to say, if I'm allowed to preface.
Always.
Like,
I mean, I don't know what you're going to say, I guess, actually, but go ahead.
I'm going to say what we were talking about yesterday. It's like Newfound Glory exists in this other realm for me almost because they invented this style that like this style of pop punk, which some people don't know, it's hardcore music. Like every single one of these songs.
Although like in a major key.
Yes.
Yeah.
But every single one of these songs is going to punch you in the face with a killer guitar riff opening up. And then they're going to have a breakdown. Like more so than what I would call a bridge.
You're
going to
have a halftime.
They're going to have a breakdown. And that is, I think some of the guys, I know Chad played in, I always get the name wrong. Shai Hulud.
It's before?
Yeah. Well, I know how it's spelled.
You can see it in your...
Well, it's the thing. It's named after the worm in Dune.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Shai Hulud.
Topical.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dune 2 in theaters now.
He's...
Dune it.
I just this picture of him. He's a handsome dude.
Oh, yeah, man.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Easy on the eyes.
They're all like 6'3". I took a picture with them last time they were here, and I was like,
height's not that big of a deal.
What the hell is going on?
So much.
So,
Chris is not tall. You can't tell this from him.
Anyway, like, so they exist to me. I think that they are important in the punk rock scene.
I absolutely agree.
And so like, they just kind of, I don't want to say they get a pass because I love this music. So I don't think I'm being easier on them, but they just kind of exist in this different space. Like I'm not, when I listen to Newfound Glory, it's because I want to hear those breakdowns, because I want to hear those chunky guitars.
And because I was not previously, and I'm still not into like hardcore stuff, although I really like the technical stuff. I love the like totally synchronized band sound that you get with that kind of hardcore thing of riffing and stuff where like everyone is in sync. It's not like the bass is carrying the eighth notes and everyone else is doing lead stuff. It's like they're all you know, it's like it's all very, which like is not easy to do.
Right.
It's very hard to be that technically good. And I know they're technically good. And I think that's the problem is that like, I know they're unique. I would know him if I heard him. I also can tell you the bands that were influenced by them. And so I think they're important. I think they're a good band, but they were never like my favorite pop punk band.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'll still totally call out what I think is good.
You know what I mean? But like, I mean, I hear you. I agree with you. And I just don't consider them. I know that they are pop punk, but they exist in a different.
Oh, you almost put them in a different. Yeah, genre. I see.
Yeah. Because like I said, when I'm listening to Newfound Glory, it's because I want all of those specific things that they do. Like, they are unique. They created a sound. And just like we were talking about on the, I don't remember what episode were we talking about, how like, yeah, you can rip on this and you can duplicate it, but you didn't create it. Yeah. They did that with their sound.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think I also just think they get better at melodies. Oh,
definitely.
I still think the self-titled has better melodies than this record overall.
You have to listen to Coming Home.
I have listened to Coming Home. Okay. I just haven't listened to Coming Home
you
in
need to give
20
time.
Years.
You need to spend time
I need
with
to spend
it.
Some time with it. Because that's I remember listening to it when I was... No, sorry, not Coming Home. Catalyst. I think I've listened to Coming Home like once or twice. I really do need
that's
to
That's their
into.
Like growing up record.
For sure.
Keep in mind, most of the things I'm going to say about this record are probably about like this record. It doesn't mean I think they're a bad band.
No, it doesn't mean totally.
It's just like, you know, but there's just a lot of things that do bug me about this.
And Neil Avron did do Catalyst. So,
okay.
Yeah. We've got to do a Neil Avron episode.
Totally.
Just like literally just talk about
all the stuff
he's produced.
Oh, he did self-titled.
He did?
No kidding.
Oh, he did? Okay. So he
which is unique because like, I think Catalyst sounds big.
Well, but it's budget too.
It's post platinum.
Sure. Well, and also, right. Self-titled would have been. He's early into producing on self-titled because that's 2000, and he was still just engineering on the Wallflowers record three years before that. Because he's a great engineer too. I mean, that's what I think makes Neil Avron great is that he's actually got a real good ear for the engineering side of stuff, and he's just fantastic with the guitars. He just like. Can absolutely crush any guitar sound.
Oh, dude.
It's not just the big punk stuff either. Cause like any record he does, I think the guitars sound phenomenal on it. And they're perfect for whatever the genre is or whatever it is. That's gotta be one of his earliest credits. Look that up before we go into track by track. What was Neil Avron's first production credit? Because I'm curious. It's gotta be early.
And so I did want
his very first big record or just any record he did.
Producing specifically, not engineering, because he was engineering stuff like all through the 90s, I think. But look up what his first like production credit is, and it's Everclear. We knew this. I forgot about that. Yeah, it was.
Well, it says producer, mixing, engineering.
But click so much for the Afterglow. I think we talked about this before, and I'm pretty sure it was produced.
Yeah,
by, yeah. I think
it's so, Art Alexis.
So that's just a couple years, or that's 3 years before
Alexakis.
So. Alexakis.
Which
Alexakis.
Guitars are awesome on Everclear record. Oh, that record. That's so ding, great. Ding,
I okay, ding, so I was ding, reading. Ding, which ding, record ding, did he do?
So much for the Afterglow.
Yeah. The record.
The record. I mean, Sparkle and Fate is great.
Yeah, no,
too,
yeah, that's
but,
great.
Yeah, 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 that riff.
But dude, well, and also it opened the opening track. We need to do that record.
We should. I mean, that would definitely this be one of those that were like, this is not an emo record at all. No one's claiming great it is, record. But it's a great record.
They're like stepbrothers to pop punk.
I agree. Yeah, no, I completely agree.
They're kind of like grown up punk.
They're punk adjacent.
Yeah. They're yeah.
And
but I mean, no one was like
rip on Music Jeopardy or whatever that show was on VH1. Yeah.
Not like Mark McGrath though.
Oh yeah, but Art he destroyed
that guy was the Ken Jennings of rock and roll.
I forgot
Jeopardy.
About that show entirely, but insane. I forgot about that was a good. VH1 had some great content back in the day.
Behind the
great.
Music
and freaking pop-up video.
I can't find those anywhere now. I
know.
To find some
why
on
are
YouTube.
They? Why are we not still making pop-up videos? Why
we
is why is that still not a
videos
show?
With punk
we
videos.
Could do it.
We should.
Ugh. All right, we'll do it. We'll probably get sued by Viacom.
I did want to note
pop-up.
So self-titled was released on MCA.
Okay.
And it performed. It was gold, certified gold. So we're moving up.
Gold, platinum. That's the order you want to be going in.
And Catalyst that I know it says had sold 600,000 copies in 2005 would not surprise me at all if it went platinum. Like, actually,
but
it would surprise me if it didn't.
It's also right around the time that things stopped going platinum as much. Not is what, that's 2004?
That's true.
Not because the band was
not because the band, just because we start getting, yeah, people anymore, start yeah. ripping music on LimeWire instead.
Blockbuster yep. music.
04.
Going out of business.
Well, let's go to track by track. I think that's a good place to go next. Let's go to first track, Understatement. Here we go. Obligatory pop punk phaser. You've yep. got, if you make a pop punk record, you have to put a phasing effect on it at some point. There's some sort of rule.
Yeah.
I think Blink-182 made
set
it.
Set phasers maybe. To fun.
That's what it is.
Set phasers to fun.
It's all Jerry Finn and Blink-182's fault, I'm pretty sure. But yeah, it's like on every record now. Kyle, let's start with you. First track, thoughts?
I think it's a great first track. And it's like I said, every single one of these, I'm going to be like, cool opening guitar riff.
Right, because it's the formula.
Cool breakdown. Right. I completely agree with you, and I take joy in not enjoying these lyrics as much.
They're pretty bad.
Yeah.
So, right off the
well,
bat.
Well, and I think bad, yes, bad. I think more specifically, young. And
young,
you know what? They were young.
And yeah, and I'm going to give...
When they were young.
Yeah, I'm going to totally give credit to someone when they're like 19 or 20 years old, not writing the best. Like, rarely is someone going to have the maturity to write like lyrics that are going to stand the test of time when they're that young. I mean, I think that's the exception, not the rule, for sure, when that kind of thing happens. Yeah. And so I don't expect, you know, everyone to be Joni Mitchell or something in her early 20s writing these songs that you're like... You're actually like, there's no way you experienced that and you just happened to somehow write that that well, and it actually makes more sense 20 years later than it did when you write it. But yeah, they're definitely immature. And really, I was trying to find the right word for it, and I was like trying to thesaurus this thing. What is the word that I'm looking for where it's like, it sounds like the first draft almost of like, it almost sounds like it was just coming out of like, what would fit here, and like, here's what the song's going to be about. It's about this thing that happened or whatever, and it's almost like it would be the first thing that anyone wrote down.
Right. Chris DeMakes was talking about this on his podcast the other day, how you usually, well, I don't know if you guys did this, but you would write your first draft with like kind of nonsense lyrics, and sometimes it wouldn't even make sense, but it had to like...
It had to roll off the tongue, right? And then I'm looking for those syllables.
Yeah, like exactly. Syllable counting. Yeah, that's exactly right.
So it's almost like they just always just left the placeholders in.
Or sometimes it sounds like, and this is where I think, this is where I don't like, it works sometimes. Because like, I don't, if someone writes the lyrics and then someone tries to make melodies with like reading those lyrics, I feel like, because like that's Elton John, Bernie Taupin, it works great. I mean, I think Elton John is specifically really good at it because he's a musical genius. And so like he just knew that like, I can't do lyrics. And so I'm going to Bernie write these lyrics, and then he's going to write this totally separate from the song. And then I'm going to make it work in the song. I don't know if that's what happened in Newfound Glory a lot. I don't know if like Steven's come up with lyrics. I know it's, I tried to read into it, and it sounds like they work together on melodies and then would bring it to the band.
Right.
But it does make me feel like maybe the lyrics came first and the melodies came second. Cause sometimes it feels like they're just cramming a word in there.
Totally.
That doesn't fit.
And so I think I remember, like I used to have all the drive-through DVDs.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure that that's the case. Like he had this notebook that he would write lyrics in, and then they would put them in the song.
Yeah. And so, yeah, it just feels like if I told you write a song about someone dying, like most of the lyrics would be.
And you know what? If I'm wrong, I'm a liar, but he's a pervert.
But yeah, I mean, like, who cares? Yeah, exactly. We just made a mistake. We're theorizing here. But either way, I don't feel bad about saying the lyrics weren't great. And honestly, even
Steve,
if
you pervert.
Even if it had all been Jordan, and I like Jordan, I'd still say he just needs maturing.
Well, and yeah, totally. And I think they do.
I do. And but like the lyrics have to be pretty bad for me to like the thing is I don't care about lyrics. We all know this. Every time we're on the show, I'm like, oh, I never even knew they said this because I didn't pay enough attention to notice that this is what they were saying in the song until I like actually read the lyrics. Because I just don't pay that much attention to them, except when they're really bad and then they stick out. You know? Like I don't think lyrics should like stand out for being like, ugh, that's pretty bad.
Yeah.
But I was writing terrible lyrics in 2002 as well. So don't, I'm not judging.
You're not hating.
I'm not hating. I guess I am judging, but I'm not hating.
Right.
Yeah, you're right. That's the way we would talk about it.
I'm judging. Oh, right. You don't have to hate to judge. You're just making the
I'm
judgment.
Just saying I don't, yeah. I'm, objectively, yeah. I don't think.
Yeah. You have to. It's your job right now.
It is.
Oh, that is. Yeah, that's why we get paid these
big money. Chris, did we ask about your, no, we did not. What's your thoughts on understatement?
Very, very much was very excited about the record. This song, because like I said, wasn't huge into Newfound Glory. And then this song was like, I was like, this is really great. And the was like, I was like losing it. Just really did not care for the jaw thing. Don't get it. Don't know what that means. I'm sick of smiling and so is my jaw.
His jaw's tired from smiling.
But my jaw
he already said he was sick of smiling.
Tell me. This song didn't make you want to pound a Mountain Dew, though.
Oh, no.
For sure.
Does.
Half a Mountain Dew. Then it's terrible. Then I'm like, why? It's flat now. Flat Mountain Dew, there's nothing worse on earth. A super crispy carbonated Mountain Dew, that first sip is so good.
It,
but
is.
Like, it really is.
Like four it sips is. Down, you're like, this is getting flat and it tastes terrible.
I'm a Code Red guy.
I like Code Red a lot.
Yeah.
And I haven't had one in 20 years, probably, but I did I wouldn't like dare. Code Red a lot. I mean, I might now.
And me and Blake, we were talking also about the Jimmy Eat World.
Oh, yeah.
Phil, chicka, 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 chicka. But even that intro, dun-ka-dun-ka-dun-ka-dun, I mean, it's just, yeah. Some good
stuff. It's a good first track, though.
Yeah.
It's a good first track. Good I like opener. It. It's a good opener. Let's
not
go to,
as good.
It hits us hard, right? What was that?
Not as good as the next one.
No, the next one's yeah, well, I'm
yeah,
fond
yeah,
of.
Yeah, the next one. First single, My Friends Over You. Let's go to track two. It's technically in there at the end. Kyle did not get the guitar riff, which
ballsy.
Is a great
riff. Oh, because it's playing it like on the outro.
Yeah, on
the
outro, it's
the
playing
it back, the bring it back.
But you did outro. It with your mouth earlier. Will you do it again with your mouth? But here's what's great. Here's why I think it's a great riff. If you can do it with your mouth, I think that's the best kind of guitar riff.
Yeah. Dude,
and like no one knows. Everyone knows what you're talking about
that's
when you do
true.
It with your mouth.
You did that.
It didn't have
like,
to be the guitar.
Yeah. It sounds like platinum. That's what it sounds like. A platinum record.
Oh yeah.
And there's a reason that this song specifically has 10 times the streams of the next most streamed song on this record.
Oh, really?
And 150 times the rest of the record.
But to your point earlier...
Wow. Like, it has 150 million streams on Spotify, and most of the record has 1 million streams.
Oh, my goodness.
Most of the track. So that's like... And it's got about 3 times more than any of the other songs.
What a freaking...
It's like Fat Lip huge. It's a monster song.
It's very big.
What a riff. That opener. Also, the bounce to it.
Oh, you can jump. I mean, it's like, did they set the tempo based on
whiplash people to this baby?
Yeah.
I was going to say, you mentioned hearing like lines that they crammed it in. Even on this one, it stands out like a sore thumb. This is becoming too routine for me.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, you don't need all those syllables.
But, you know what? But even that
this
way.
This is becoming too routine for me.
But even that way, the way the rhythm works on it,
it
I
works.
Think it's fine.
It plays.
It works. I'm just saying it. I can tell. I can tell dude, someone's writing the lyrics and then they're fitting them into a song.
Right.
Because at least that's straight like eighth notes. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You know, it's like it's consistent.
Ja,
some
ja,
of the
ja.
Other stuff is like they ja, cram like ja, ja. Quick 3 notes into a thing. And yeah, it was... but yeah, it's a good single. Chris, what are your thoughts on it?
Absolute banger.
Banger.
Great guitar riff. I wrote great lyrics. Maybe I was in a good mood. As
no, I
mean,
I
you probably were.
I think there's more relatable than the first one.
Yeah, well, you guys are just like poo-pooing on the lyrics.
No. I'm talking about how he fit him in, or he's, okay. or it's wordy. It's wordy, not the yeah. how he fit him in. It's just wordy.
I guess on this song, I really, when I think about it, it tells a nice story.
Yeah, I pick my friends over.
And this song's lyrics
songs
do
about
not bother
relationships.
Me.
Oh, okay.
This song's lyrics
okay,
do not
cool,
bother
cool,
me.
Cool, cool.
Just to be totally clear,
me,
I like
you
this
got
one.
Me
this
in
one's
my
fine.
Head. Like,
this one's
like,
fine.
Maybe I'm wrong. It just shows that I am just a leaf in the wind when it comes to my convictions. Like, I will follow the crowd no matter what.
I said I liked it, but I think I hate it like you guys.
I think I'm with you guys, yeah.
We should try that for a show. Like, jokingly fake all of our opinions and then be like, just kidding. We think this. Chris will be like, yeah, me too.
Now,
I was also kidding. Yeah. You guys just didn't know.
The chorus, I do think, is a little hot on the syllables.
Yep. And yet, still awesome. Dude, I think even the cha-cha-chunks in the verse are just awesome.
Yeah.
Can I tell on myself something stupid that I thought at one point?
Go ahead.
I grammatically had this song's title mixed up, and I thought it was friend apostrophe S, like my friend is over you.
Oh.
I thought he was like breaking up with the girl. For his friends, like middle school style.
Yeah.
Because I didn't pay enough attention to the lyrics to realize that, like, oh, no, it's like he would pick his friends
still
over
kind of
the girl.
Same, still kind of the same message.
But it's just interesting that apostrophe makes a difference.
No, that apostrophe is carrying the weight of the world.
yeah, because it's a totally different song. It's like, what a pansy move. You can't, your friend can't break up with his own girlfriend. But then it's like, but I'm going to pick my friends over you if you make me choose. I love that sentiment.
Yeah. No.
I know
that's funny.
It's a real difference.
Yeah. You swear that you're true, but my friend is over you.
Right. It even works, right? Because it even sounds like, so it almost works even with the lyrics. I just like, I don't know. It was too far into this being a gigantic single for me to figure that out. I don't remember what the exact timeline was.
Was
but,
it a conversation or were you just listen to it like a 17th time and you're like, oh, wait.
No, I think it was literally like I could be totally misremembering this, but what would make sense to me is that because I'm playing CDs at the time, I'm probably never actually seeing the title of the song unless I see the music video and I probably noticed that there's not an apostrophe. And I was like, oh. He's choosing his friends.
Now, I do want to quickly say, great video. Mm. I think that they did a good job playing. Like, this was the.
I don't even remember it at all.
It's
just
good
a live
video, bad
performance.
Video. Oh,
but that's what I love about it. I think these guys were well known for putting on an amazing show, right?
I've never seen them. I've heard they're great, though.
Oh, I've seen them I've seen them a dozen times.
Right, because they tour a lot. And
they're killer.
Grind it out, yeah. And so there was no weird story to the video. There was no weird, like, you know, bizarre visuals like in the Hawthorne.
No monkey suits.
It was just them playing live and rocking out in a venue. They just had a bunch of fans come in and rock out with them.
Well, maybe we won't do that on Good Video, Bad Video, because how could it be bad?
But it doesn't. Yeah, it's
it won't
bad.
Be fun to talk about. Okay, we'll see. Okay, any other thoughts on My Friends Over You? It's a banger of a single and was huge for a very good reason.
Yep,
definitely.
That fair?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. This was one of the monster pop punk songs of the decade.
They nailed it. I mean that intro riff is just so good. It has a great feel to it, and it makes me happy. It really does make me want to bounce.
Yeah,
which I would is say exactly what I want.
If you were going to put like the 10 biggest pop punk singles together, I mean, you'd have like Sugar We're Going Down, Fat Lip. This would be on that list for sure.
Well, and I think what's cool about this one is in my personal opinion, this doesn't sound anything like Blink 182.
Oh,
The fact that that's what was kicking butts at the time and they're like, yeah, we'll take this other punk band and then this record goes platinum, I think it's pretty cool. And I think it's probably why I'll defend that they are formulaic.
By all means, defend.
Yeah.
Doesn't bother me at all. Let's go to
track. If you defend them enough, I'll just take your opinion.
Yeah. Okay. Chris will be on your side by the end of this podcast. I might even be.
I take my shirt off. There's a Newfound Glory shirt. I'm a huge fan. Huge fan.
This is like my dad, who I joke about. He has like every NFL jersey because he just ends up rooting for whoever's winning at the time, basically.
I thought the other night we were out to dinner with dad, and he was like wearing a Buccaneers shirt. And I was like, now that man has no history in Florida.
None.
Okay.
This is every, like, he's been a fan, as far as I know, he's been a fan of every NFL team at some, if they've been good in the last, in my lifetime. He has a hat or a jersey.
That is so awesome.
That is awesome. So
but we make fun of him so hard for it.
Is he a player fan? Because that's how I am.
He's definitely a player. That's part of the problem.
I'm not a team fan. I'm a player.
He's a lot of times rooting for old OU players and stuff like that. So that's part of the reason why.
That makes more sense.
But it also, often coincides with them being
in the winning that the Super Bowl. Tampa Bay, a relatively unheard of team until.
Right, because there's always this line that's like, oh, I've always been a big Denver Broncos fan.
Yeah, right.
Or whatever, and it's like, in 96.
I love the Las Vegas Raiders.
Yeah, I've always loved the Vegas Raiders. No, said no one ever, because they've been terrible for forever. All right, anyway, let's go to track three, which is Sunny. Sorry. In case you're watching this on Spotify or YouTube, my headphone cables got like somehow stuck on my chair or something, and I couldn't move my head. And so that whole break was just me trying to get untangled.
Well, and it was tangled in two spots. It was double confusing.
You're trapped,
you
dude.
You're trying to find one tangle, but it was a labyrinth.
I was getting claustrophobic there. Okay, Chris, what are your thoughts on Sunny?
Just absolutely huge fan of this little shuffle. What is this called? This shuffle that's like the chick magnet. Longview Shuffle.
Well, I don't call it that. I call it something else. I think it's Everybody Wants to Rule the World.
Okay.
Ooh. That's really what it is, because it's like a 12-8. It's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1. Or you can count it 1, 2, 3, 4.
No, I
count it 1. But the drum part is almost exactly like Everybody Wants to Rule the World, where the hat is actually not doing the whole triplet. It's only doing part of it, and the kick's doing part of it. That's the weirdest drum beat until I happen to be in an 80s cover band.
Yeah.
And we recently did that song, and we're like, you don't realize how weird that drum part is.
Great song.
But it's so good, right? But this is like that.
My kids are obsessed with that song because there's some like YouTube meme with that song.
It's a phenomenal song.
Great song. My son has a Tears for Fears shirt.
Great song.
Yeah, he wanted it. We listen to it all the time.
It's one of the best songs ever, but I love that kind of shuffle in this song. It's really just basically like the drums are playing triplets the whole time, and everything else is kind of on the quarter note.
That riff, the guitar riff, man. It's iconic. It's the word I'm using this week.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Kyle, what are your thoughts on it?
I love this song. I don't know if Steve or Chad wrote the song, but I know that this song is about Jordan's grandfather who passed away. And I'm just such a big fan of anytime you hear about, I'm a sucker for hearing about someone else writing a song for their friend that's in the band that they've lost someone. Like,
Jordan didn't write it.
No.
Oh, that's sweet.
Or he didn't write all of it. You know what I mean? And like, I just think that's even if he did write all of it, the band allowing him to do that and put this on the record, I'm a huge fan of that. And I actually think some of the lyrics, knowing that, I think some of the lyrics to this are really touching. An empty chair at all the tables, and I'll be seeing you when all my days boil down.
I like that.
And I like the, wasn't even paying attention because.
Wait, should we do a compliment sandwich where you say the good lyrics and I say the bad lyrics?
Yeah,
and
then
you say the good lyrics?
Yeah, say the bad ones.
Okay, the bad ones in my. Because this is one of those songs where I like it. Some of it sounds very first drafty.
Okay.
To me. I like the sentiment of the song. I like the song, but some of the lyrics that are like, it's hard to get through tough times and long days, but it really just depends on the season.
I was looking at it because that's the. That's
the one you have as good or the
no,
bad?
No,
that's the bad. That's the bad.
Fight!
But it literally sounds like
it's crammed in.
Like and it also sounds like the first thing someone would write about someone dying. Like there's no depth to that really at all.
It sounds more it also sounds conversational but immature.
Brutal.
Man, I'm sorry.
tough times and long days. But really it just depends on the season.
Also like
Like he immediately, what is that? Contradicts himself?
Yes. Well, and then this is more of like, this is probably,
I'm starting to feel terrible suddenly.
Oh my God.
This is me being nitpicky, but there's also the lyric, pictures fade away, but memories are forever. But that's the exact opposite. Right. Pictures actually stay the same, and our memories are terribly corrupt, and they don't, like every memory expert would
maybe
be like,
he's
that's
singing
actually
what he hopes right there.
Right, maybe. But like, and also like, I mean, it's 2002. We've got digital cameras.
Yeah,
they're not fading at all. But anyway, that was just kind of random. Anyway, give us another good lyric, though, so that we end on a compliment.
Okay, knowing that this is about his grandpa, I've lost the best part of my day.
Yeah.
That is, such a nice
That's line. What I'm saying. It's like, it's just like, it's a refinement. It's almost like someone, I want to just go like, I really like some of these lyrics,
yeah,
but this verse has to change.
And it's got to be, one, Steve's a pervert. Two, they're young, right?
Broken human, yeah.
They're just young.
I say youngness. But it is a really, it's a sweet song. And I like the, I'm from the John Foreman school of every lament is a love song. And I love, that sounds weird, but I really do like sad songs about people dying, just because I think it's about the most, first of all, everyone experiences it.
Yep.
Everyone.
Yep.
And there's just something about like a song that I feel like helps that situation. So I generally am very attracted to songs about someone losing someone.
Dude,
that sounds really weird and creepy, maybe, or macabre or something. But
macabre.
Tell me, you weren't moved to your core by WandaVision. The line.
I didn't watch it. I've not seen it.
Or wait, is it WandaVision or is it the Avengers where she says, "What is grief if not love enduring?"
That sounds more familiar. That I can't remember what that's a good line.
It's from a Marvel movie.
Yeah.
Or right, show.
But I didn't see WandaVision, but it sounds familiar. So I think
like,
it might have been.
I love that sentiment, right? Yeah. Like, and that's why I completely agree with you. I love a sad song about loss because it's like, that is, I mean.
I have a whole playlist of them on Spotify, actually.
It's sad, but it's also just a really, I mean, they're real, you know?
And a lot of them are my favorite songs by the artist that I have on that playlist or whatever. It's like, I don't know. There's just something about that specific emotion that sometimes people nail. And you just go like, you can't ever describe it really but it's like, oh, that song. And it especially helps when, this is a bad example because it's got a more boppy kind of feel to it. It's a happy feeling sad song.
Yeah, totally. Oh, but we didn't even mention the bass line.
Oh, it's good. Right.
Killer.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Boom, boom,
but great song. So yeah, good song. But yeah, we had to crap on a couple lyrics. But other than that, really good song.
Oh yeah.
Really like it.
Good one.
Let's go to track four, Something I Call Personality. Chris Monnier, what are your thoughts on Something I Call Personality?
Well, this song rocks, man. This was always one of my favorites. It's just, first of all, using the song title in that like first line kind of, and me and Kyle already talked about this on the video pause, but the hell yeah, it's so freaking awesome. And that shuffle bridge right there, where he's doing that like kind of drum shuffle on the snare, and you've got the
really fast
guitars.
Train beat. Yeah.
Yes. And I mean, that's a moment where you realize the band is really tight, although there's going to be a revelation here.
Kyle.
Dun, dun, dun.
Mark Hoppus played bass on this song.
Crazy.
You know what? I didn't know that. Do you know what I think they should have done? Neil Ivorn should have like carbon copied his bass tone.
I completely agree. It's kind of like my only complaint about the song.
Yeah.
It should have had the Blink-182 bass tone. Because otherwise,
it's a little more recognizable.
It's like Green Day's bass tone. To me, they're like,
So
iconic that you kind of have to be like, or like Brian May from Queen's guitar tone. You have to go like, yeah, we.
And the thing is, it wouldn't have hurt the song. This song,
no,
would have
been great,
dude. This, can I say what I think of the song?
That was me passing it to you to tell us that tidbit and tell us what you think about the song.
I love it. Yeah. I love the hell yeah, hell yeah, brother. this one freaking pumps me up, and I am not much. I'm almost not at all a mosh pitter guy. Like, I don't want to be a part of that. But on this song, I want to be close to it. I want to witness
maybe
it.
Maybe the outside of the circle,
exactly.
Pushing people back into it.
Maybe
a little
bumping
bit.
Someone
bumping
in. You
mosh
know?
Pit adjacent.
Yeah, mosh pit adjacent. I want to be aware of the mosh
pit. Not now that I pay my own health insurance, do I want to be in a mosh pit? But yeah, I'll be.
Oh, yeah, and
close.
I work on computers for a living. I've always wondered, like, if I broke my wrist, it just wouldn't be able to work.
Yeah, it'd be a bad.
I just don't want to go in because I think it's I don't want to bump into people or be bumped into. I think it's a weird thing.
I worry about like weird middle age aggression and them not like realizing their limits or understanding like, well, you know, we're all way a lot
and,
more
and
now.
Also, this is hardcore adjacent hardcore right, bands right. with the freaking punch dancing?
That's crazy.
What is that?
I don't know.
It is weird.
That is weird. Like, and also, like, those guys are regular guys, right?
Yeah. Of course.
Like, those guys have regular jobs, and then they punch dance at hardcore shows. Yes.
But are people punch dancing in their 40s still?
Dude,
I haven't been to a hardcore show in long enough time that I don't know.
I have seen some dudes punch dancing.
Believe it or not, no one is punch dancing at, like, a Dashboard confessional show that I'm at.
There's a dude that wants to, though.
Wonder Years, the pit was getting pretty gnarly.
Yeah, I can imagine it was, but yeah. Wonder Years, that makes sense to me. Yeah. Or, I mean, the last show I was probably at that had, like, a decent little circle pit going was that last Yellow Card show, the final.
Oh,
Ryan, that one got some. This guy got pretty ruckus.
Yeah,
not like that, like in a good way. People were excited.
Ryan was yelling at security at the Yellow Card show I went to in Seattle because I guess they were being a little rough with somebody that was in the pit.
Oh yeah, freaking someone.
Ryan was like going off on the security guard.
I wonder if this happens all the time, but I do feel like an abnormal amount of time that I'm at a show, they have to like stop and the singer is like, hey, we need help. This person down here, like no one knows until the lead singer on the microphone. It's like, do you not have someone like looking out for this? Why is the singer of the band always the person that's like, hey, it looks like someone's having a medical emergency?
Yep.
Anyway, I like it okay. I'm super intrigued at the beginning, but I don't love the chorus of this song. Mm. I'm into the energy. I'm into the, like, it does make me want to, like, yeah, let's do this thing. But then the chorus is just, like, the melody's okay. I feel like it could be better. But I think
the halftime is what does it for me.
I like that.
It's very much a roller coaster ride of a song.
No, I'm into the feel.
Well, it's halftime, and it goes into the latter part of the... It kind of speeds up a little. Yeah. Yeah.
Any other thoughts on Something I Call Personality?
No.
All right, let's go to Head On Collision.
Wait, I did have something to say. That's kind of brutal. Like, so they just like bring Mark in and the bass player. They're just like, hey, you just don't get to play on this one.
But I would do that in a heartbeat.
Step aside,
yes,
Ian.
But I'd be like, why me?
If you were like, hey, Blake, Joe Perry is going to come play guitar on this song, I'd be like, hell yeah, he can play my Strat.
Would you?
Yes.
Wouldn't you wonder why I called Joe Perry?
No, because
why he was in the room.
That's not what happened. What happened was like, you know,
Mark. The whole thing led up to this.
No, but
hey,
I'm
Blake,
sure.
So we've been talking to Joe.
Right, exactly.
He didn't play on the whole record. That would be different for sure. But like, obviously, Mark liked this band. He took an interest in it. They started doing management. I guarantee Mark was like, I'd love to come help on it or something.
That's
or do
exactly.
Something.
So I think it went down like, because like I said, they toured. I guarantee you it went down like, guys, I really want to play bass on one of your songs. And it was like,
or even
definitely.
Just offering to do something.
He probably even said it to Ian, the bass player. Well, and then maybe, it was like, you've got to.
Maybe he's aware too of his like star power and how that could have
totally.
Like, helped a lot. Okay.
How could he not be aware of his star power?
I get it.
But you know what's funny? I don't like most of Mark's cameos that he does on records.
We've talked about that. He's never really
City
just
on Motion City. It's kind of like
it's one of my least favorite Motion City songs.
But
simple,
I love
the Simple
Mark.
Plan one's good.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he's totally. But he's just not batting 1,000, which I would think that you could do.
He sings on an MXPX song. It's like one of the
MXPX songs.
Song's
good.
Yeah, it's like good.
Yeah.
So he's at least 50-50 so far. And it's not like this is bad. It's just like I want to hear Mark's
bass. I think I'm just
tone.
So mad at him for the Motion City one. I'm like,
the Motion City
no,
one was weird.
Dude.
I would have rather.
Two things I love so much. They should have worked.
Right. It's also we talked about it. We've done that record. It's the worst song on the record.
It is.
It just happens to be the like least good song on the record. It's not like it's bad, but it's kind of like an album song.
Didn't we contemplate like he knew it was the least good song?
Probably.
Like, guys, why don't I, let me sing on this thing.
Add some Lowry's seasoned salt to this. Makes everything better.
Man, but if I'm getting points on the record, I want to be pushing him on a single.
I know.
I'd be like doing the hip hop thing. Motion City soundtrack featuring Mark Hoppus.
Totally.
Definitely
making that
money.
Paper.
Yeah.
Well, make them more money too. I mean, that makes everyone
happy. Oh, right,
happy.
Right, right, right.
Everyone's happy if you're selling records. Okay.
We all eat.
Let's go to track 5, which is Head On Collision, which is another single. Let's go. Kyle, what are your thoughts on Head On Collision?
Well, I put the guitar solo in there for you guys.
The breakdown
that rips. Also, this is the one, obviously, that All Time Low named themselves after. I love this song.
I like it a lot, but it's kind of the opposite problem of the last one. I actually like really like the chorus, but the verses are like, okay. I mean, I'm into all the instrument stuff.
I was going to say the bass line in the verse is excellent.
Keep in mind, I'm just talking melody. When I say the verses or anytime I'm like saying that, I'm mostly talking like it's a melody thing for me, which is just kind of the top. But that's what bothers me even more is because I'm like, but the music is so good. I feel like you guys had a better, but I know people throw away verses all the time. So good chorus, good single. Chris, what are your thoughts on it?
I agree with the verse because I wrote down, making all their boons ring cute.
Yeah.
What does that even mean?
I don't know.
Run cold?
It's the breeze you make.
Run?
The breeze, yeah, that's a bad lyric.
The verb run does not, you don't.
It's not a great metaphor. Yeah.
It's not even a metaphor.
And it's probably because he was a pervert.
Yep. What a freaking pervert.
Bones.
I don't know. We're going to use that as excuse for every single thing from now on.
Well, we're going to blame any unpleasant thing about this album
on Steven.
On Steven the pervert.
It's his fault.
Yeah, and obviously the bridge is amazing. Now, I will say there's a little bass thing in the chorus. I don't know what you'd
call
it.
Like the scaling, scaling?
And I never liked it on the chorus. Yeah, I always thought it sounded a little odd.
Well, man. I'm sure that if you are like post-hardcore pop-punk musicians, someone's probably gonna have to tell you to dial it back more than not.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
In a pop
right.
situation.
Okay.
Sure.
And that might have just been a part where it didn't get reined in.
Yep.
Because you know, you can get too technically in the weeds on that stuff and be like, hey, we're trying to sell this record to 14 year olds.
And also good for him that he can play like that, right?
Oh, no,
like,
they're all
musicians.
Yeah,
chillax
tip of the hat.
Great musicians.
Yeah.
Well, I equate this to like Fall Out Boy. What's the drummer's name? Andy?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's too much.
Take This to Your Grave is like he
Lots of
is
drums.
Trying to fill every empty space with a million drum parts.
Right.
And then like...
Because he's clearly talented. And
he's very good, obviously. And he was in a hardcore band. And I'm confident that Infinity on High is more boring for him to play live. But it was like good that someone was like, hey, Andy.
Right.
For the sake of the song, it would be better if you would
leave the space. Yeah.
You know, or whatever. And sometimes the simpler option is better, even though musicians, we love to see the cool technical stuff and we geek out about that stuff, but it doesn't always serve the song best. But not that that's what we're saying is happening here, but
yeah,
I think it is a common restraint or refrain when like when someone listens to very technical music, metal or like shredding stuff or jazz or like whatever it is that they learn that they're really technical at. Even Travis Barker dumbs it down sometimes because he realizes that like that's what this song
everybody
means.
But Dream Theater.
Well, yeah, no, there's some bands that just
that's play their thing
the whole time. Muse is even well, maybe they don't or Mute Math or someone, you know, like there's these people that definitely just go all out on the nerdy stuff, but. Sometimes you gotta simplify it. It's like, you know, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. That's gotta be one of the best bands ever, but a lot of the parts aren't that complicated.
Yeah.
Learning to Fly is not a complicated song.
Yeah.
But that's what I needed, simplify. So let's go to track 6. It's Been a Summer. Chris, thoughts on It's Been a Summer?
It's a decent mid-album bop. Just kind of transitions.
I really only like the pre-chorus.
Yeah.
My favorite part of the song.
Everything else
those
is
harmonies.
Meh, but the pre-chorus is cool.
Oh, man. Yeah.
I don't like it. But yeah, we're kind of getting to a middle of the record thing.
Sure.
And when I feel that way and then I look at the streams, basically, if you look at Spotify, it's like the two singles obviously have the most.
When the streams validate you.
But the streams are getting less on every song as we go down the record.
They're trailing out. Yeah.
So it's not a great sign that you're, it, like, to me, it means that you're losing people, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So, and obviously, it's not this. Spotify is a bad measuring stick because it comes out 10 years after this record comes out,
right?
As far as when people have it. So it's like,
right.
You're looking at you the back
get that initial
listening of stuff.
Right.
It is super cool though that these bands that we do are getting millions of streams.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Every track on this record still has a million streams. Yeah.
That's cool.
That's still cool. But like, you know, My Friends Over You has 150 million.
Yep. And it deserves it.
Yeah, it's a great song. So yeah, it sounds like we all agree. This is just kind of like a middle of the track or middle of the record track, and it's okay.
The special moment is the pre-chorus.
But the pre-chorus
is
cool. But that's what's,
something nice about that part, yes.
There's not any song on this record that doesn't have at least some part on it that I like.
Yeah.
Even the ones that are like, meh. Like, there's no, I could not sing the melody of this chorus again to you right now.
Well, we've
even
talked about that phenomenon too before, in the last day. We've talked about that phenomenon too before where you have enough pieces of songs that you probably could have pieced together a better record if you'd been more patient.
So I have...
Even better. I should say even better, not better. It's a good record.
Yes, but better still. I mean,
I have experienced writing a song and having a producer tell me, no, you, like in this instance, let's pretend that I wrote that song. I had a producer tell me, the pre-chorus is the hook. That's not... Your hook is not the hook. This is the hook.
Yeah.
And we switched it around, and to this day, it F's with me.
Oh,
what song was it? I've just got to know. Is it a song I played with you?
Yeah.
What was it?
Well, we probably hardly ever played it live. It was Touche Sandman.
Okay, yeah.
But like, he was right.
Right, yeah,
he,
of course.
And also,
it's weird though. Right, yeah.
It's like, it's bizarre. And so, I don't know what I would want them to do, but... I have been in that situation, and there is no question that the hook of that song is the pre-chorus.
Yeah,
I'm not saying it would make a chorus. I'm just saying
it's the best part of the song, for sure. That's an interesting thing. I've not had that situation happen to me, not because my songs are phenomenal. I've just not been in a situation where I'm normally like doing most of the production on my solo stuff that I write, because I didn't write in our band.
Yeah,
but I mean, I feel like I did that with you in our band. Oh, you would write a song and bring it to me, and I'd be like, this is amazing.
Right.
You could ditch this part and build on that, and it'd be like killer. No, and you did.
No, we built the whole song that way.
Yeah.
It seems like, I think. It had like one cool thing, and the rest we just had to kind of create around the cool thing.
I also remember doing that with, there was another song that I feel like we did some sort of rearrange. And we did that with Friends tracks too, like where they come to us and we're like, hey, like this is the best thing. You need to repeat that. You're only doing it once. Give me more of that. And, you know, sometimes you just need like an outside source to tell you that. And maybe Neil is not at that point yet here, because obviously Neil's a technical guy.
Well, and maybe it's just about the energy.
I don't know if he's a songwriter guy or not. I don't know. But I mean, I just know that like the reason I would guess Neil Averin's not a big songwriter guy like Rick Rubin is.
Yeah.
Is because I listen to bands that like they did a record without Neil Averin and then one with, and it's not like the songwriting or something drastically changed. It's just like it sounds phenomenal.
Yeah.
And like I'm sure there's like the producing stuff of like helping doing some arrangement and things like that. But I would be surprised if Neil Averin was like telling people to rewrite choruses. But I could be totally wrong.
I also think I'm Neil. I've got these 19, 20-year-olds with this energy. I think I would have loved it. You know what
sure
I mean? Like this is about that.
Well,
that energy.
Yeah, because he's much older. He was born in 68, right? Or 60s.
Yeah.
He's older than those guys.
I just
looked him up. That's,
okay.
That's not something
I was like,
know.
Dang.
Well, yeah, because he was like engineering in the 80s and 90s.
Wow,
so,
Chris.
he was an engineer for a while.
You have a Rain Man ability. I know what
I just know everyone's birthday.
You're a big Neil fan.
Yeah. I would also guess that they already had the singles when they recorded the rest of this record. Or at least knew what they were going to be.
Yeah.
Don't you think? Because if you know you've got My Friends Over You, it really honestly does not matter what the rest of the record sounds like.
I mean.
Especially in 2002.
Oh, especially in 2002. Yep. Do you know how many records back then you'd like hear a banger of a single and then you get the CD and you'd be like, there is nothing else
like
on
this
album that is as good as that.
And as a compliment
looking at
to
you,
them.
The New Radicals.
I was going to bring it up. Yeah, that one's the ultimate.
F those guys.
that one song is so good though.
As a compliment to these guys, I think that My Friends Over You is is just all of the things that they're great at, but turned up to 10. Like, it's the best version of them. And so that is way more welcome than the New Radicals record.
Yeah. And it's like,
in comparison,
it also is like, out of left, like some of those bands, like in the late 90s, which is why there was such a revolt on like downloading music illegally, is because people were kind of like, I'm tired of spending $12 on something that there's one good song on. That was a problem in the late 90s.
Problem in the 90s, yes.
In fact, it was a problem where I did not buy an album at one point. Like, when I was in middle school, I didn't buy an album until it had three singles that I liked.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. Because I was just like, okay, if you've got three singles on the radio, chances are those aren't going to be the only good songs on the record.
I didn't have a lot of money. So I go to Walmart and buy Deep Blue Something's album, and it's just like a shit sandwich. Except for that one song. So that's a very disappointing thing for a young man.
Right.
Whoa, bro.
Yeah, and
shots fired.
I had a couple records like that where it was like, man, the rest of this sucked.
Breakfast at Tiffany's is a banger.
It is.
Yeah, that's fantastic song. But yeah, there's all these records like that in the late 90s, early 2000s where the label's like, we've got the single, we don't really care about the rest of it. They probably didn't give much of a budget for the rest of it.
They didn't care.
Vanessa Carlton was another one like that, where that 1,000 Miles was an amazing song. And Fastball. I actually really like the Fastball record.
Well, and I was going to say, I actually like the second single as well. I think I like the second single more than the first single.
And they had a killer,
the slow song.
Out of My Head, Out of My Mind or whatever. Yeah. That record's actually really good. Yeah. I really listened to it recently and I was like, yep, it holds up. Yeah. It's good.
But that single sounds different than the rest of the record.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely not. You're kind of like, oh, wait, what is going on? And that's the other thing you can really do a bad job with is like, if your single is the weird song.
Yep.
Well, I watched a Song Exploder the other night about REM losing my religion. And that was like a total departure for them. And it was the song that like launched them into just, he was like, literally, that video came out and within a week I was like walking on 6th Avenue in New York and everyone recognized me from the video. He was like, I was famous instantly. And it was weird because like we'd been a band for 12 years at that point touring. We'd been constantly touring and writing music for a decade. And all of a sudden everyone in New York City is like, you're the guy from that video. But like total departure from that band. And if that was what you expected from then on, of course they did like purposely make a right turn where they were like, we don't want to do what we've been doing for the last 10 years.
Yeah.
They wanted to make that change. It was their choice. It's not like they're like, well, crap, now we have to be a mandolin band. Like crap. Guess I'm playing the mandolin.
It wasn't that far off.
No, that song's awesome, by the way. It is a great one. Okay, let's go to track 7, Forget My Name.
Yeah, that was...
Kyle, what are your thoughts on Forget My Name? Right? Is that where we're at?
Yeah. I think it's great. Great chorus. Bouncy, fun. I actually really love the way that this song starts. I had a hard time skipping it, like starting it front, because I like Jordan when he's singing down, you know? Like,
yeah, it's good.
And so I really like the way his voice sounds. I like the slow open and the way that it builds and the chorus is freaking catchy. Love it.
You know, I've always wondered in a band where you're, you've got just a lead singer that's not playing anything, and he's certainly not writing the music part of stuff. Do you end up getting pigeonholed into whatever tuning that your guitarist wants to play in all the time and be like, well, that's the key I've got to sing in? You know what I mean?
I found out who the background vocals are.
Oh no.
Who is it?
It's Matt Skiba and Dan Andriano.
No way.
You're talking shit on Alkaline Trio.
But it does sound kind of strange in the background. But Skiba's got one of those voices that sounds different on every record, I feel like, right? I mean, like, I'm always, this is not the same guy. That's pretty funny.
Matt Skiba. I did not mean to interrupt you guys. I just thought that was you. A shocking thing to see.
Love me some Skiba.
What do you got on this one, Chris?
This is Forget My Name, right?
Correct.
Anthemic. I like the anthem quality. I mean, this is something that Newfound Glory does really, really well.
You really like Skiba.
Skiba's great. The best part is how natural the background vocals sound. Wait, they if you're listening, you might not have heard Kyle.
No, he did. Yeah, we were just saying, like, what are those background vocals? They're kind of strange because they're kind of like hard panned, I think, and one's low and one's it's almost talky.
It is almost talky. Yeah.
Chicago natives singing on a Florida record. That's what you get.
So that's what made us look up who's singing.
But that Tell All My Friends I'm Dead line, that line is hot, dude. Yeah. I love it. It's, it's good. Forget My Name. They sing about relationships a lot.
They did. I wrote Good Chorus. It is a good chorus.
Yeah.
It's a catchy one. I like it. That was my only note, though.
All right.
Good chorus. Okay, let's go to track 8 then. Never Give Up. Kyle, what are your thoughts?
Okay, so I love this, but because it's just so punk rock. Like, this song was made, like, this song was made to get kids going crazy.
And, yeah, double time.
Yes, and I love that. And I love even that, like, at the beginning of each verse, he slows it down, almost like giving them a breath, like just a little bit of a break, and then goes right back into it. So I... Unlike the other songs where, like, I want the catchy chorus, the jump up and down, I enjoy that this one is just balls to the wall punk rock song.
I feel you. I like the beat of it, but the melody is just forgettable to me.
Sure.
It's just not. I could not sing it again.
Yeah.
Chris?
Always down with the forbidden beat.
Like, duh. Yeah.
Very, very cool. I think a lot of bands in this era wrote songs thinking specifically about how they would come across live and how they could get the kids moving in a certain way. Yep. And I feel you, man. I think that's probably the vibe they were going for on this one. The chorus is really good on this song too. Like, that where they go really wordy most of the time, I like that they kind of back off, you know, it's just the fewer syllables don't. What is the I'm having trouble remembering right now. The actual
Don't words. Back down.
Don't back down. Yeah. Yeah. So, and the bridge, we only got a little piece of the bridge and the guitar.
Teeny tiny little piece of it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a lot of notes on this one. I must really like this song.
Yep. Well, there you go. Now you know. All right, let's go to track 9, The Great Houdini.
Mm.
I'm so glad you made that clip with that guitar riff run up that then the vocal comes in and starts singing with it. That is a cool part.
Hot.
Kyle, what are your thoughts on it?
Love that part. I actually really like the chorus to this one has like a swing or a feel that is definitely distinctly different from everything else on the record. And I personally like it.
I think some of it's that, like what Chris was saying, it's almost like they chilled out and did less.
Yeah.
And I think that works better in this case.
And I freaking love that.
Maybe that was that guitar producer.
That guitar run. That was, that's.
And it sounds sweet. Awesome.
Yeah,
too.
It does sound
like
awesome.
It's like the perfect guitar tone. And then for the vocal to match it is cool too, but not the whole time. It's right. like he starts just, the just riff, yep. he starts the run up, and then
he's going to make you want more.
He hits the last four notes of it or whatever into the chorus. It's a cool way to go into the chorus yep. for sure. And totally. In fact, it's like something I would like try to rip off because it's a fun.
Let's rip it off.
Let's do it. Let's rip it off. Chris, do you have any thoughts on this one?
All the stuff you guys said is true. I would say the melody of verse is completely forgettable. Nothing to write home about. Is
yeah.
that another something?
That's
Newfound Glory song? Something to write home about?
I don't think so. I don't think. Get Up Kids. Yeah, I think we can safely say Get Up Kids did not name their band or anything after.
No.
Although one of their members was a member.
That's true.
And actually,
James played keyboards with them, right?
Oh, James played in Newfound Glory
too. And he played on one of these tracks.
Okay.
Yeah.
No way.
They have a lot of guest spots that have like played with them. Ryan Key played guitar.
Band.
Who else? Yeah. Someone else that I was like, he played with them too? Like, it's like, yeah, every band.
Well, Toby Morse from H2O sings background vocals on Understatement.
They're a band's band.
Yeah. They're a band's band. Right.
People tend to like them now that the pervert's not in the band anymore. Yep. Let's go to track. Sorry, I'm just going to bring it up over and over again. Track 10, Singled Out.
Stutter.
Okay, here's what I'm talking about with Chris on that drum part, because you're the drummer. It sounds like he's messing up, but he plays it the exact same way every time, and it's some sort of weird, it's so fast I can't count it right. I'd need something that like slows it down, but I think it's like two triplets and then he goes straight again, but it makes it sound like the snare is coming in late or something.
Right.
So he's like, he's playing it right the whole, like he's playing it correctly technically yes. the whole time. To me, it's super distracting. It sounds like a mess up every time for me.
Well, that's the same vibe I was talking about in... there was another song where I talked about the bass walk up. Head on Collision. Same kind of vibe where I'm just like, you're getting a little fancy. You didn't really need to. It didn't quite fit.
Yeah,
because it sounds weird. Although I never noticed until Blake pointed it out.
For some reason, I was listening today and just going like every single time he played it, it would like jar me. Like, did he just mess up? And then he'd play it the exact same on the next phrase. And I was like, no, he plays it the exact same way every time. It just, so that's one of those things where, you know, maybe it's like, play the simple thing.
Yeah. But
yes.
If it's distracting.
Yes. These
and it's especially weird because it's over the vocals too. So it is, you know, it's kind of, it's like, it's on the chorus. It's not like it's on the lead up to the pre-chorus or something where it's, this is now your time to shine.
Yep.
I don't know. That's kind of my thought on it. And so we were just talking about him being a great drummer. And I'm like, yeah, but now I'm going to complain about the one thing. And he's playing it technically correct. Yeah. It's just a weird choice.
And Kyle, I hear it.
What are your thoughts on it?
Man, I love this song. I was just trying to find so we know that later on in Newfound Glory's being a band, James Deweese from the Get Up Kids and Reggie
the Full Effect, and the Dwarves.
Join, and I don't think he was a part of them at this point in time, but in my mind he is. So like I think he played that keyboard part. I'm not certain, but he definitely played it live, you know what I mean? So
when he joined.
But I love that it opens with the synth. I love that the guitar part that we heard at the end mimics that. I think it's super cool. I really like this chorus. I don't necessarily know exactly what I like so much about it, other than it feels good to me. It's got a good feel to it. I really like this song, and I love the sliding power chord kind of solo type thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
the octave kind of thing. Yeah, that's a classic pop punk.
Oh yeah,
thing that we do. It's like we're not very good at guitar. We can play an octave guitar solo.
Do the two strings, skip the middle. Yeah, even I can do that.
Yeah, it's like it's the classic. I mean, like there's not a pop punk band or any derivative of it that doesn't have one part like that on the record. Or at least I can't think.
And why
I would like
you?
To find one. It's like everyone does it at some point. Because it's a classic. It's a staple of the genre. Okay, let's go to Belated, which is track 11. Chris Monnier, thoughts on the penultimate track? I always have to get that in there.
Mm.
It's...
I know what you're going to say, or it's going to be my note.
What?
Meh.
Yeah. That...
Since it's your note, may I ask you both a question?
Yeah.
Did I not pick out the best part of that song?
Oh, you did. Yeah.
No, okay. The clip is fine.
I think part of my note was like on another band's punk rock record, this might be the best song.
Yeah.
It's just, and it's also the placement. Like, it just, there's no trick in this song that we haven't heard 16 times already.
Yes.
I just don't know if it, is this how many?
This is
13.
Right. And that, and if it's over 10, I'm always like, you could have just left it off, right?
Yeah. Wait, and
Kyle, we need to hear Kyle's opinion. Look like.
It's just I actually agree with you guys. It's okay. It's just fine.
Okay.
It's just what.
Don't hate it. Don't love it. I do like the part that's in the clip.
Yeah,
it makes me feel some things, but it's not enough for me.
But again,
to
I can't like it. I sing it again.
My mind. That's why
I can't sing it. Like I can't sing it to you right now. And
oh, that's
I think
funny.
What
I
you're.
I just heard it.
I just heard it. I can't sing it again. And whereas like I still have my friends over you stuck in my head right now. That guitar riff is still just on repeat. In my head.
The guitar riff from Story So Far, or Belated, like, is that the right one?
That's it. Yeah, but the melody I can't sing, for sure. But I think you're right. We've heard everything in this song we've heard at some other point on this record. So there's nothing new.
Man. Right.
That makes the other stuff that was new on the record, like, sound repetitive at this point. So
sure.
I think you could have just ditched this one.
Oh, you do a disservice to the previous song.
Yeah, you kind of do a disservice to the trick you did before by doing it again. Not that there's a trick in it. I mean, there, as you mentioned, Kyle, I mean, there's going to be an intro. There's going to be a breakdown.
Yep, right.
There's going to be...
There just is.
That's fine. There's a genre style here, and they've got a band style within that genre. That's totally fine. But like you can... If you don't have something... great, it is kind of like let's just ditch it because I think that you could have
which we didn't even mention that these guys birthed another genre. I don't think we would have easycore bands without this.
Name an easycore
you
band.
Know so like much more
four,
about this
four year strong
oh no like that right these guys kind of opened that door
like I mean I don't know that A Day to Remember is exactly but I mean Chad produced that Homesick record.
Right? Yeah.
So like I don't think you have they influenced a lot. So yeah.
Shall we go to the last track?
Let's do it.
Story So Far, track 12. Good clip, Kyle.
Thank you.
I like that clip time. What are your thoughts on it?
I think this is a great last track. I think I was telling you guys, I had a hard time picking the clip. I'm glad that you liked it, but I really love the snare hit bass line in the verses. I love that they're kind of like chilling out on this one.
It's literally like boom. Doesn't happen really anywhere else.
It's kind of the opposite of what we were just talking about the last song. Like, we really haven't heard anything like this on the record.
I agree.
And also, it sounds like an end song. It sounds like it's over, and it does the thing that we always talk about. It ends really big and in this really cool, grand way, and it makes me want to start the record over. So,
which is, I think, your job as the last track.
I agree. So, job well done, fellas.
Chris Monnier.
I like that they change it up here a little bit. Piano's a nice touch. For some reason, the vocals seem extra processed on the song. That's probably just because we've got instruments a little bit on the drier side, right? Because they're kind of taking it back a notch, leaving some space.
Well, I think it's obvious that Jordan is singing most of his backgrounds on this one. Which
is that
not,
what it is?
Which is not... I don't think it's that on all the others.
No, yeah, they're a lot of guest vocalists.
They're very stacked.
Maybe that's why it felt a little more that way. Yeah. And throughout the song, I think Cyrus, right? Cyrus?
Yeah.
Okay.
Drummer.
Cyrus Baluki.
Yeah. Just phenomenal job throughout this whole record.
What a drummer.
Changing it up. So the chorus, the drumming on the chorus of the song is very cool.
I really like the feel of this song a lot. It does feel like a last track. I kind of like the slickly produced background vocals that are going on. I like the guitars. I like the straight verses.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And going into kind of not quite double time, but then they kind of go to half. I mean, like, so they're still doing the tricks. They're still switching those, but like, it is kind of the most straight beat we get on the record, and it has a cool vibe to it.
And still,
but I don't love the melody.
It still manages to make you, even though they slow it down, you kind of want to bang your head.
You're still doing this a little bit. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah. So, but like, still, like, I think the thing that like I keep saying over and over again is just that there's less vocal melodies that are super hooky and awesome. Almost everything that I like on this record is a guitar or the band or whatever, but it's like the melody lines are just not the things that stick with me. And this last song is the same thing. I'm kind of like, but that's the thing that I realize that is the most important thing to me is melody. I really don't care. Like,
yeah.
Right.
Even if you're like an instrumental band, it's about melody. It's like, okay, there still has to be some sort of hook. There's got to be something that's like drawing me in, something I can hum along to or something like that. And so I'm more picky about that than I think most people are, because I think that if I saw them play this album live, I'd probably really enjoy it because I'd be like feeling the band playing these songs, you know? Right. Like, but when I'm listening to a record, there's a part of me that does that, but I still like... The melody is kind of the thing it has to be for. So sure. I realize I'm being too hard on this, is what I'm trying to say, is that I'm probably being harsher than I need to be. But that's just because that's just the thing that I care about.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
Yeah, I think so.
Should we just, I mean, we're not going to play it, for God's sake, but like, can we talk about the hidden stuff at the end of the record?
Scared the crap out of me when I was younger.
Always.
Like, scared the crap out of me.
But were you going to sleep with this record on?
And dude, I was always going to sleep with a record on.
Well, so did I, but not this kind of music. I was always going to something a little chiller.
I told you, bro. Mountain Dew, Newfound Glory.
But how do you go to sleep?
That doesn't make any sense, no. Kyle. You don't sleep after those things.
I was so exhausted. My heart was very awake, but my body slept.
Yeah, I think you're thinking of cardiac arrest.
Yeah, I think that sounds like you're going to,
I felt tired and cold.
It's why we're all getting cancer in our 20s and 30s now. It's because all the Mountain Dew and Surge that we drank. And don't sue me, Pepsi.
Like, truly.
I don't really think that.
I got scared multiple times by this record. Even just being in the house and it playing and then time going and like, someone's in your house.
Yeah.
I like that they found that vocal effect and they were like, let's do a hidden track. Hey, I'll give them kudos for putting it at the end of the record, not in between songs.
Yep.
Because it would be obnoxious.
Yeah.
As it normally is if it was between songs.
Yeah, they're calling it joke skits. It was a hidden track.
And it was totally hidden. It wasn't even a listed track on the thing. Yeah. It was, which is fine. If you're going to do it that way.
It's all right.
But as we've talked about before, I did not listen to this one going to sleep, so this never scared me. But Jars of Clay's orchestra warming up always woke me up and always scared the crap out of me on that record. Because that's the kind of record I go to sleep with.
No, Jars of Clay was a classic chill, 90s.
Like, it's a great. It's got those kind of droning computer beats and stuff. It's a perfect go to sleep record. I love that record, but at the end of it, scares the crap out of me in the middle of the night.
They say love will be.
You're making me think of Jars of Clay made one of my favorite music videos.
Really? Which one?
What is it? Do you know how I feel when I say the and the water's just maybe flood? Drowning. Flood. No, it's not flood. No, it's later.
Okay.
It's like later.
You know, there have been, we've talked about bands that have good records. Their first three records are really, really good. Their third one is very underrated, in my opinion, and should get more credit than what it got. I feel like that's a band that got pigeonholed into the sound they had on the first record, which was totally
but they were still
budgetary.
Right, but they were still filling up huge venues.
And so when they go to their next record, they're like, no, we want to be a full band. People are like, oh, it doesn't sound like the last record. They're like, we never wanted to make music like that forever. We were constrained by budgets. Yeah. It was like it was all drum loops and stuff because we couldn't afford to do real drums.
Work.
From Good Monsters?
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't think I ever saw that video.
We gotta watch it.
Okay, I'll check it out.
All right.
So anyway, hidden tracks. We don't like them.
Yeah.
But when you do it like
when
this,
they're scary talking yeah. stuff,
no,
right?
No, don't scare us.
But if you're going to do it,
don't be a jerk and scare us. Yeah.
Don't do, yeah, don't try to scare us.
Don't but scare us.
It scared Kyle, and he's still working through trauma and he's going to counseling for it. Yeah. Guys, you've ruined his life. All right, let's go talk about lasting impressions. Does it hold up? Kyle, let's go to you first, because I mean, you're the Newfound Glory guy.
So when I prefaced this in the beginning, I really was kind of prefacing this moment. It does for me because these guys created a sound. And like, so in that way, yes, it holds up. Do I think that this is even, well, that's another question. I'll wait for that.
Yeah, we'll
but
go
like,
to that one.
But yeah. like, yeah, it holds up for me because like these kids took hardcore music, put pop punk over it, and it works. And I think it still works. I think when they are at their best, it's really impressive what they're doing. So
yeah, but
well, do I think that this record is that all the
I know
time?
I know that's another question. Okay. Yeah. But yeah, it's like, are they at their best though?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so that's where it gets,
there are moments.
There's moments. Yeah, yeah. for sure. Yeah. So Chris, what about you?
This is a weird one.
It
was them rising to the moment. They couldn't choose the time. It was about where they were in their career and where music was at the time. I mean, when I hear it, it doesn't sound incredibly dated to me. You know, I don't think, oh, this sounds like 2002. You know, it's...
But it does sound like Newfound Glory.
Right. It does sound like a young Newfound Glory
yeah,
to me.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with that.
The youngest Newfound Glory.
No, no, no.
It's a great rock and roll record. Yeah.
But like I said, for some reason, I like the one previously to this better in the sense it doesn't sound...
I think I do too.
This one sounds more immature than the one that came before it, even though it's two years later.
No, I think the best moments
on this are way better than the other record.
I think that's fair.
Right?
But yeah,
like,
that's totally fair.
It just, it's almost like they weren't ready to make a whole record. But
there weren't enough of those moments.
Right, but they had to make this record at this time. They couldn't wait any longer.
But if you could combine Self-Titled and this into one, take the best of both into one record, it would be... Great, right?
Yes.
So that's where I go. I think I have to lean on it doesn't, because like I hadn't listened to this album in a long time. I probably had not listened to it longer than either one of you.
Yeah.
My guess would be. And I just found, and I listened to it several times because I was like, I want to really like, because a lot of the records we do, I have listened to more recently than this one probably. So I was like, I need to give it several listens and stuff. And it just, I kept being like, man, there's some parts of this that I really like, and they really did a unique thing for sure. Like, and I always appreciate that about a band that has their own sound.
Right,
that's a cool thing.
Yeah.
that happens, not a ton, you know, because almost everyone's borrowing from a lot of people. Not that they're not borrowing too, but they did kind of do a unique thing, and I think that anyone would be able to go, that's Newfound Glory, but. I just don't think it's there. It just doesn't hold up for me because so many of the melodies are like meh.
Right.
And it bums me out a little bit because it does have some fantastic moments. And like My Friends Over You is a great single.
It's almost like knowing their potential.
Yes.
And that's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Because I've seen what came after and I think it's better. So
you see it on this record, right? I mean, you know that they can make My Friends Over You. And so... The bar has been set.
Yeah, so I'm going to say parts of this record hold up, but when we're talking about an entire record, which is generally what we're doing on this, I would say that more of it doesn't hold up than does for me. And that's just me.
That's your truth.
That's just me. That's my, I, God, you know, I hate that. like music, I want to be clear though. The music part of it holds up.
Yeah.
Across the board, there's nothing on this record where I'm like, this song is boring or something. It's all, my complaint has always been lyrics and melody.
Yeah.
on anything that I'm complaining about on this record is it comes down to that. Because even the ones where I was like, meh, I think you could put a different melody in it and I'd totally change my tune.
Yeah.
That sounds a weird way to say that. But so yeah, I would say no. Okay, Kyle, now is it their best album?
No.
No. No. Right? What do you think their best album is?
So I am a Coming Home fan. Not a lot of people are, but it's their weird one. I love that record. I think it's amazing. But also, I have listened to every single one of their records. Like, I still, if a Newfound Glory record's coming out, I'm getting it. I'm going to rock it because I'm a ride or die.
Yeah, I feel like I can't, because I'm not the ride or die Newfound Glory guy. The only reason I can say it's not their best album for sure is because I know I personally like Catalyst better.
Yeah.
Even though I've gotten all the way into Coming Home or
You will like Coming afterward. Home the most. There is no question in my mind.
Okay, so I need to get into that. So Chris, what about you? Where are you at? Best album?
No, okay. No, I don't. Self-titled is it for me too. Mm,
good one.
But I do have to say Radio Surgery is a great record.
Great record.
That
one's got the melodies.
I hadn't gotten really back into them and anything that they came out in the late 2000s. And yep. You told me to listen to that. And yep.
Which one's that? What's that called?
Radio Surgery. You can tell by the album artwork that Kyle would like it. That doesn't just I'm look into right it. Up
yeah.
his alley.
Yeah, it does look like it. So this is one of the more interesting discussions because then we get to, is it their most important album?
It's their first platinum record.
And My Friends Over You has three times the amount of streams on Spotify. Keep in mind, that's just the metric I'm looking at.
And Mark Harpus is on it. Mark Harpus.
He steals a bass.
So, like, they don't have the career they have without this record.
Yeah, so probably.
It's got to be their yeah. most important yeah. one, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, what about...
Well, maybe self-titled.
What about From the Screen to Your Stereo, though?
Ooh.
I'm serious.
Those are separate.
That's fair.
Those are separate.
That,
yeah.
I think
was an EP first, right?
Yes, but I think that was the gateway drug for a lot of people.
I think you're right.
It was mine because it was the cover of the Glory of Love.
Right? Oh, what a cover.
Such a good cover. Well,
and
right?
You would find those songs on Napster all the time. And yep. You'd be you're like, right. What is this punk version of this song that I, yeah.
I like that take, actually.
Because, King of Wishful Thinking. Oh. I love that cover.
And do you know what's funny? Like today when I was reading whatever, some stuff and looking at their discography, I was like, oh yeah, they did come out with a cover EP first. That's how they introduced yeah. themselves to people, which I personally loved the like punk band doing covers of pop songs thing. Cause I thought it was such a genius like way to introduce like
yep.
this kind of new genre. In the sense that, like, really, Blink-182 just kind of blew the doors open in 1999 with Enemy of the State. Not that it didn't exist before, but that, like, right. really came on people's radar. So if you want to, like, get people into a genre, hey, give them a song they're familiar with.
Yeah.
Well, from a movie from their childhood.
You know, Vagrant did better. It, too. They had Before You Were Punk, 1 yeah. and 2. And speaking of Blink-182, they did Dancing With Myself on the first one.
Yeah. So I think that's a pretty good take, Chris. I like
I think smart. The first time I heard Newfound Glory is because of that song. It was the right time to make those songs, those cover songs, and a great way to bridge people that were born in the 80s with songs that were familiar to them, but, you know, kind of played out.
At high school battle of the bands, I played the Glory of Love cover.
Well, there you go.
Like, I played that Newfound Glory you're version a of that
physical
song.
Manifestation that my take was the correct take.
I think you're right. Yeah, I think, yeah. But it is, I like that. My Friends Over You is definitely like a, this is a silly way to use the word, but it's a catalyst for them as far as that was a humongous song for them. So it's like that does launch them into a different level, but I do agree they don't even get to that without your
yeah.
cover stuff. So I think that's a... But that was a more interesting discussion than a lot of these ones are. Because a lot of times we're like, yeah, duh, it holds up. And yeah, duh. Like, you know, sometimes it's just like, obviously, when we're doing, you know, some genius record or whatever. Okay, Desert Island Songs, two or three of your favorites. Chris Monier, what do you got?
This is pretty on the nose. Understatement, My Friends Over You, and Something I Call Personality.
I'm lame, and I'm going to pick two singles, My Friends Over You and Head on Collision and Sunny, I think. Oh,
Sunny's a good tune.
I think those are the three for me. Kyle?
The real opinion, the one that matters.
I'm going My Friends Over You, The Story So Far, and Something I Call Personality. All right. So crossover.
A little bit of crossover there.
Yeah.
Yeah, we all had two, right?
Yep.
Dublaze.
Yep.
What about Nobody's Perfect? What's the worst song in this album? I think we're probably all going to say Belated, but does anyone have a different opinion than that? I mean, just based on the discussion, it seemed like we are like, you could boot that one and none of us would be super sad.
Yep.
What about Grower Not a Shower? Do we have one? Kyle, I'm interested to hear yours first because being the biggest Newfound Glory fan in the room.
Man, I don't think so. Like, okay, if I'm being real, as an adult, I love the hell yeah. I was probably traumatized as a kid. Like, oh my gosh.
I don't know about the swears.
This band, they said yeah, swear words. They're talking about hell. But no, I love it.
I don't have one really. Yeah. I don't have one, I don't think.
It was Sunny for me.
Okay.
Like it.
Yeah.
Liked it when I first heard it, but I was still a little leery of any punk band doing anything that was anywhere near a ballad, unless it was Adam's song. That was my only
right
exception to my rule. And then,
again, because about death. Right. You get the pass, right?
You're right. Well, then that
another
that
great another well, lament.
Had I mean, known about the reason that I liked Adam's song,
Sunny, you would have liked this one too.
Yeah. But yeah, as I listened to it more and more over the years, Sunny became one of my favorites.
And you know that I was always the sucker for the sad song or the ballad.
Always.
Always.
Always, like, always, always.
Give me the power ballad.
Tale as old as time.
Give it to me. Which is a great love song from Beauty and the Beast.
What is?
Well, that's the line, tale as old as time.
Oh. I thought you were still, no. You said power ballad. I was like, I don't know that song. Well,
but it's the ballad. Yeah, sorry.
Now, there's a power ballad in Frozen 2.
True. Oh yes. Definitely. Yes. Wait, are you talking about the one
Lost in the Woods?
Yes.
Oh, well, but is that the one that Weezer covers on the soundtrack?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Yes, which is
excellent.
I was like, perfect.
Yeah.
And it sounds like a freaking REO Speedwagon. So
I was Chicago REO Speedwagon.
One of the
that whatever that power ballad.
Well, and like the genre. Stacked vocal. Yes. I mean, just like. Like, yeah,
it's awesome.
It is
pretty cool. It's so cool that everyone our age is making art now.
It's so on the nose.
Well, sorry, we were always making art, but now they're making art and it's being released to the masses.
Right, yeah. Now we're the ones making Disney. Well, not we, but people our age.
We made that movie specifically.
All right, that does it. Any other thoughts on the album before we peace out, Kyle?
You look like you're looking for something. Well, this is not going to make sense in context, but I had a note that on Never Give Up, which you guys won't know just with me saying that it was a Saves the Day song. It sounds so much. It's the song to me that sounds the most like another band, and it sounds like
Saves the Day.
Sounds like Through Being Cool.
Through Being Cool era Saves the Day.
Yeah. So
I have to go back and listen to it now.
Yeah.
Forget My Name, you said, or Never Give Up.
Never Give Up.
Okay. Making a note.
Chris will listen to that and get back to you on his thoughts on it. But that does it for us.
I'll comment on our podcast.
Yeah, he'll comment.
Kyle was right.
His note was not good.
Thanks for being here. Thanks for joining us. Follow us on Instagram and YouTube at Finding Emo Pod. You can watch the video versions of these on Spotify or YouTube. Sometimes we get copyright stricken. It's really a problem on YouTube. We're trying to work through. We also started these good video, bad video things where we just watch a music video we haven't seen in 20 years and give it the thumbs up or thumbs down. Most of them from the 2000s so far, not holding up.
Got a lot of thumbs down.
Not holding up. A lot of weird concepts that we don't understand what's happening. Maybe we need someone to explain what their idea was behind the band, behind the video. But
drugs.
Yeah.
Drugs.
Or just whoever had the cheapest, who was the cheapest pitch? lowest bidder.
Yeah. That's probably
this is right. Probably some of that with the labels.
I need one camera.
Yeah, we're like...
And a stuffed bunny rabbit.
And add all the shaking
and
post.
A child.
Yes.
Always a child. A lot of children in these... And a lot of famous people that we forgot...
Pre-fame?
Were in these
Kardashian
videos.
Kardashian is in a Fall Out Boy.
Yeah, we didn't remember that at all.
No idea.
So check those out. We're doing those weekly. And let us know in the comments of them which ones you want to hear. Because like we'd love to know. And for these record ones... Hit us up on Spotify. There's a question on a poll. If you listen on Spotify, that's like, hey, what do you want to hear? That's kind of where we gather all that. You can also just comment us on Instagram or whatever. We'll write it down. We put them in a spreadsheet. We are keeping track of it. And the things that get the most votes, they're going to get done. Okay.
The spreadsheet is super punk rock, by the way.
Right. There's nothing more cool than a spreadsheet with tables that cross each other over multiple sheets. It's very
pivot
cool.
Tables.
What? Yeah.
VLOOKUPS
in the house.
Kyle doesn't know it.
I don't know.
He's never had a
he
real
does
job.
Not. He's
he
never
know what we're talking is. About.
Yeah, like, yeah.
And I mean that in a good way. He's never had a real job, like a shitty real job.
Yeah. He hasn't worked for a Canadian corporation. That's,
I call these guys once every few months for my computer problems.
Yeah.
And that is the truth.
He's like, hey, are you slaving away for capitalism again? Like, yeah. I'm like, yeah. He's like, you want to take a break and help me fix my
want to take a break and do it for free?
Anything.
I can't turn
anything
it on.
Anything to not do this, Kyle. Please let me help you.
Hopefully Kyle will get through his technical issues.
Yeah.
I take care of all the technical stuff on this one so that you don't have to, Kyle.
Thank you.
It's my service to you.
I do appreciate it.
Thanks for being here. Thanks for joining us. We'll catch you next time.